My saving action. As our car speeds down a broad highway, beside me someone is driving I have never seen before. In the back seat are two women and a man, also strangers. The car races onward, surrounded by others driving recklessly as if their drivers are drunk or gone mad. I am not sure whether the day is just beginning or night is falling. I ask my companion what is happening. Looking at me furtively, he answers in a strange language, Rex Voluntas. I turn on the radio, which blares noisy static, and I faintly hear a weak, metallic voice monotonously repeating, Rex Voluntas, Rex Voluntas, Rex Voluntas. The traffic slows, and by the roadside I see many wrecked and overturned cars with fire spreading among them. We stop, and everyone abandons the car and runs toward the fields, surrounded by a rushing sea of terrified people. Looking back through the smoke and flames, I see many trapped souls who are doomed. I am forced to keep running by the human stampede that pushes me along. Amid this delirium, I vainly try to reach a woman shielding her child as the mob tramples them, many stumbling to the ground. With chaos and violence spreading, I decide to move along a slightly diagonal path that will let me escape the crowd. I aim toward some higher ground that diverts this stampede of madmen. Many who have fallen clutch at my clothes, and soon they are torn to shreds. But I see that the throng around me is beginning to grow thinner. Finally, I manage to break free of the crowd. I continue to climb, almost out of breath. I stop for a moment and notice that the mob is now moving in a direction opposite me, surely thinking that by running downhill they will escape this crisis more quickly. I realize with horror that the terrain they are following ends in a precipice. I shout with all my might to warn the people, even if only those nearest me, of the imminent catastrophe. One man does break free of the crowd and runs toward me. His clothes are in tatters and his body is covered with wounds, and yet I feel a great joy that he can be saved. On reaching me, he clutches my arm and, yelling like a madman, gestures frantically down the hill. He is speaking a language I cannot understand, but I think he wants my help to rescue someone. I tell him to wait a little while because right now it is impossible. I know that he cannot understand me, and his desperation is tearing me to pieces. Then he tries to go back down, but as he is leaving, I trip him, and he falls headlong. He remains sprawled on the ground, sobbing bitterly. As for me, I realize I have saved both his life and his conscience, for he did try to rescue someone, but was prevented. Climbing farther, I reach a plowed field. The earth is loose and furrowed from the recent passage of a tractor. In the distance, I can hear gunfire, and I think I know what is happening. Hurriedly, I leave. After a time, I stop again, and now everything is silent. Looking back toward the city, I see a sinister glow. I feel the ground begin to shake beneath my feet, and a rumbling from the depths warns me of an imminent earthquake. Within moments, I lose my balance and find myself lying on the ground. Curled on my side, I gaze up at the sky, overcome by waves of dizziness. The earthquake passes, and I look up and see an enormous blood-red moon. The heat becomes unbearable, and I breathe the acrid air of the polluted atmosphere. Meanwhile, I still do not know whether dawn is breaking or night is falling. Sitting down, I hear a growing roar. Soon, hundreds of aircraft fill the sky, passing overhead like deadly insects and disappearing towards some unknown destiny. Nearby, I see a large dog looking up at the moon. It begins to howl, almost like a wolf. I call it, and the animal timidly approaches me. When it reaches my side, I gently pet its bristling fur and see shivers running down its body. The dog pulls away from me and begins to leave. I get to my feet and follow it, and we cross a rocky area until we reach a small stream. The thirsty animal rushes forward and eagerly begins to drink, but at once draws back and falls over. I go over to the dog and touch it, and realize that it is dead. I feel a new earthquake which threatens to knock me over, but it subsides. I turn around and behold four cloud formations far off in the sky, advancing with the muffled rumbling of thunder. The first cloud is white, the second is red, the third is black, and the fourth, yellow. And these clouds are like four-armed horsemen riding on the storm, traveling across the heavens and laying waste to all life upon the earth. I begin to run, trying to escape the approaching clouds, realizing that if their rain touches me, I will be contaminated. As I run toward the highway, suddenly a colossal figure towers over me. A giant robot blocks my path. Threateningly, it brandishes a sword of fire. I shout that I have to keep going because radioactive clouds are coming. But the robot replies that it has been stationed here to prevent destructive people from entering. Adding that it is armed with laser beams, it warns me not to come near. I see that the robot separates two distinct areas. The one I am coming from, barren and dying. And the one ahead, lush with vegetation and life. "You have to let me pass because I've done a good deed," I shout. "What is a good deed?" the robot asks. "It is a constructive action, one that contributes to life. So tell me what you've done that's so good," the robot demands. "I've saved a human being from certain death, and what's more, I've saved his conscience as well." At once the giant robot stands aside, and I leap into the protected zone, just as the first drops of rain begin to fall. Ahead of me is a farm. A soft yellow light glows through the windows of the farmhouse nearby. Only now do I realize that the day is just beginning. When I reach the house, a man of rugged yet kind appearance invites me in. Inside, a large family is preparing for the activities of the day. They invite me to sit at their table, which is spread with simple and hearty food. Soon I am drinking pure spring water, while children play round about me. This time, says my host, you have escaped. But when once again you must cross the border between life and death, what coherence will you be able to show in your life? I ask him to explain because his words sound strange to me. So he says, try to remember what we would call the good deeds, to give them a name, that you have done in your life. Of course, I don't mean those good deeds people do when they are expecting something in return. Recall only actions that have left you with a sensation that what you have done to others was best for them. It's as simple as that. Now I will give you 3 minutes to examine your life and observe what inner poverty there is in you, my good friend. And one final suggestion. If you have children or loved ones, do not confuse what you want for them with what is best for them. Having said this, he leaves the house along with all his people. I am left alone to meditate on the suggestions of this country fellow. In a little while, he returns and says to me, now you see how empty you are within. And if you're not empty, it's because you are confused. That is, in either case, you are empty. Let me give you a recommendation and pay heed to it, for it is the only thing that will help you in what is to come. From now on, do not let a single day pass without filling your life. Now we say farewell. In the distance I hear him shout to me, tell the people what you now know. So I set off from the farm in the direction of my city. Today I have learned this. When human beings think only of their own self-interest and personal problems, they carry death in their souls, and everything they touch dies with them.